Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most.
Whether it's reactions,
matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
We now go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcome on, Albert Breer of the MMQB. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, sorry about the confusion there. I'm at a youth hockey tournament, so I'm happy to jump on with you guys now. Happy New Year.
A happy New Year, my guy. We were just talking about Belichick on McAfee saying the NFL needs to implement a anti-tanking device because of the end of the season issues, sort of what the Browns are doing, what the Patriots might be doing, and basically doing a lottery like the NBA. Do you think tanking is that pervasive where the NFL would benefit from that?
So I think like one thing that's interesting about it is it's gotten more pervasive, I think, with the advance of analytics. And that sounds like a little weird, but like you remember what the Eagles did a few years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're very analytically advanced, right? The Browns, like now you're seeing it again. But, you know, where's their wheelhouse been? They've been very analytically advanced. So, you know, I think what's happening with some of these teams now is – not only is it like, yeah, we can get a better player. It's like, okay, look, so here's the impact of us not getting the better player, right? Here's the impact. Here's what we can do. Say if we have the second pick versus the sixth pick, if we trade the pick, right? Here's how much more we can get. And, you know, I think it just kind of comes down to, like, in a lot of these situations, like, we can't tank because it's really hard to do that in a sport that's like football. But – What we can do is engineer a lineup that's going to make it less likely that we win. So I know the NFL, I've looked into this in the past, the idea of a lottery, and I know the NFL has really not wanted to do it. But, yeah, I mean, I think if this sort of thing continues, if it looks bad this weekend, I could see where it becomes a discussion point again.
Yeah, I mean, Albert, I just think it stinks for fans of, like, the Giants, for instance. You watched and you're like, oh, we finally have a great game. We've scored 30 points for the first time all year. But instead of the reaction being like they did something, the reaction was like, oh, no, they screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, I say it again, sorry.
No, just like the Giants this last weekend. Instead of the fans saying this was great, we scored 30 points for the first time this season. We were doing something. They looked at it like, oh, no, you screwed up. And for us here, we've had seven straight weeks of looking at it and saying, well, that'd be best if they lost.
And look, like if the Giants are dead set on taking Cam Porter or Shedeur Sanders, or let's just say they really like one and they don't like the other one, right? Let's say they view what they have like a top of the draft grade on one of them and then they have like a second or a third round grade on the other. And then they wind up with like the fourth pick. You guys know how much it's going to cost them to go from 4-1. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It could cost you 3 first round picks to do that. You know, like the fourth pick plus maybe your next 2 first rounders. So, like, I mean, like, what is the smart thing to do? Well, on paper, the smart thing to do would be to allow for your team to have a higher pick naturally and engineer the result that you need to get there. So I just think that that's what complicates it, you know, like where, you know, it's pretty clear what the smart thing to do. And you'd like as a fan to be able to go into these situations and, you know, and root for your team on the level. And, you know, the Buffalo-New England game is really interesting this weekend where, I mean, New England's got the number one pick now. And I can tell you, living here, fans here are going to be rooting for the Patriots to lose. And then on the other end, you know, you got a Buffalo team that not only isn't going to be motivated to win because they're locked into the second seed, but as a division rival, maybe they want to see the Patriots win the game. You know, maybe the best result for them is for the Patriots not to get the first pick. So, you know, I there's no perfect way to fix it, but you know, creatively they could do what some of the other leagues have done with the draft lottery and those sorts of things.
Albert Breer of the MMQB on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Yesterday, the big announcement was that the Browns have let Mike Vrabel out of his consulting contract 1 week early to pursue other jobs around the NFL. Do you think it's a lock that Vrabel gets a head coaching job this cycle?
I think he's as close to a lock as anybody. You know, I think he and Ben Johnson are clearly the two bells of the ball. And, you know, to the point where I think every team's going to want to at least talk to them. And, I, you know, I think there are, you know, natural landing spots for him, too. I mean, the Raiders are obvious, right, with Brady there. And that's been, you know, that's something that's kind of gone around in NFL circles for the last couple of months. The Giants, they have, you know, I think one of his picks for general manager would be Ryan Cowden. Well, Ryan Cowden works for the Giants now, and his defensive coordinator from Tennessee, Shane Bowen, who followed him all the way from Ohio State, he's there too, right? Like, so they could be a fit. Plus, I think the Maras would probably see some Parcells in Vrabel. If the Patriots were to open, that would be another one. The Bears, I think there's some natural reason why they would like Vrabel. The Saints have like a coach-centric model that's waiting for someone like Vrabel to step in, you know. So, I at the end of all this, like, I don't think he's going to have a pick of any job he wants, but I think he will have multiple options, which is pretty rare. And, you know, ultimately, I think if he wants a job, he'll get one.
Albert, I thought the Ohio State discussion had kind of simmered down, but in the past couple of days, it feels like it's reignited. And depending what happens with Oregon, tomorrow would probably be a big impact in all of this. But do you feel like college is still on the table if he doesn't like any of these NFL jobs, or is that just a no-go because he does have so many different options?
I think like it's one college and that's it. You know what I mean? Like I think if you asked him, like, he'd probably tell you he doesn't want to go back to college, and I think he's genuine with that. And I don't know this for a fact, but I think he views himself. Well, I know he views himself as an NFL coach, but you know who was just like that was Jim Harbaugh. And Jim Harbaugh, I would have told you in 14 and 15, does not want to go back to college. Dealt with too much at Stanford. There are too many issues with it. Like, he just liked coaching the NFL better. And his alma mater kept asking and asking and asking, and eventually wound up getting him. You know, and so. You know, I don't think Mike's going to be sentimental about where he goes. Like, I don't think there's a sentimental tie to the Patriots, for example. Like, I think there are things he likes about the place, but I don't think he'd be sentimental about going back there. You know, and I don't think, like, that would really play into a decision to go back to college as much unless they kept after him. And unless it was, look, like, this is a place where you can come and have a statue built. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, there's part of it where – you know, and I think it was this way for Jim Harbaugh. Is like, he looked at it, and it's like, eventually it was like, well, I could actually go there and be Bo Schembechler. And I think he'll be remembered in that sort of way at Michigan now. You know what I mean? Like, that's on the table for Vrabel, where, you know, like, if they kept asking him, they made the money right. They made it so maybe he doesn't have to do as much hands-on recruiting. He can kind of be the closer the way Nick Saban was, the way Jim Harbaugh was at the places that they were at. You know, then, you know, I think you could make it hard for him to say no on the premise that, like, hey, I can go do that for 6, 7, 8 years, go win a couple of national titles, go build a statue of me outside the Woody, and then I can still go coach in the NFL. So I think it's really unlikely. But, you know, just from, like, having followed the Jim Harbaugh thing, like, I would not rule it out, you know. And look, like, there's this part of it too. He likes Columbus, so that could be part of the equation as well.
Albert, Vrabel getting let out of his contract early certainly lines up with every report in the last 8 weeks that Kevin Stefanski is safe, and yet there's some whisperings about maybe some assistant movement there. Yeah. I think there was one, I don't know if it's a fan theory or whether anyone actually reported it, maybe Andrew Berry moving up to DePodesta's old role and hiring a new GM. What do you think, what does the landscape look like when all the dust settles on 2024 for the Browns heading into 2025?
I think, like, leadership is probably static. I think that's the most likely scenario. could there be some movement at different levels of the organization? Certainly. Like, I think anytime you go through the kind of season they've just had, you know, like everything is going to be looked at. And so could there be some changes? The offensive staff, I could see that. You know, could there be some front office movement? Sure. But I think like Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are safe. And I would say in all likelihood, they're coming back next year. And again, like, I think that was the plan all along because of everything that they've gone through the last 2 years from an injury standpoint. And also because I think like everyone is taking responsibility for the Deshaun thing. It's not just those two. That was an organizational decision, you know? And so now it's going to be on them to go find a quarterback solution and bring in competition for Deshaun and see if they can get more out of Deshaun or someone else in 2025 at that spot.
Albert, we're in a new spot now. Now the Browns are pick number 3. Does that mean quarterback should be in play for the draft this year?
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to look at it. And I expect that they'll do all their homework on Shadur and Cam Ward, anybody else who will be available. And I think that that's why, I mean, look, like the reality is if you're a Browns fan, you should probably root for them to lose on Sunday. And I think that there are probably some people in that organization who quietly are hoping that happens. You know, because of the cost of going up in the draft at that point of the draft, right? Like going up from 6 or 7 to 1 is much different than the cost of going up from 3 to 2 or 3 to 1, you know? So, you know, look, like logistically, because of Deshaun's contract, they're in a position where they probably can't go out and sign a Sam Darnold, you know? So, like, I think there's that leaves you with two routes to really create competition for Deshaun in the room. One is the reclamation project route, which is like you go the route that the Vikings went last year and getting a Sam Darnold. Maybe that's somebody like Justin Fields, you know, and believe in your ability to develop and get more out of somebody else's failed, you know, high draft pick, or you spend a high draft pick yourself. Just financially, that's the way they could make it work, where they could add real competition to the room to challenge Deshaun in 2025.
Albert, do the Browns think they're a quarterback away from being the team they thought they were going into the season?
Yeah, I think they do. And I actually think that they're not out of line to think that way. I mean, it's still a really good team. You got premier players in key spots, guys like Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett. Yeah, I think Jerry Judy's really starting to flash the promise of what he can be, and maybe he can be the guy that everybody envisioned him becoming when he came out of Alabama 4 years ago. So, you know, you've got some key pieces. You've got a good middle class. You got good infrastructure. You got a good head coach. I think they can rightfully look at it and say, you know, we should be in the double-digit win category if we can find a way to become better at the quarterback position, and not just like a little better, like significantly better than they were this year at the quarterback position.
All right, Albert, do the Buckeyes pull it off tomorrow?
God, I don't want to jinx anything. how do you guys feel?
I feel, I mean, it Oregon is the other best team in college football.
Calm. I don't know why I feel so calm. It's kind of bugging me, you know, but I mean, that team that played on that cold Saturday night in Columbus, I mean, I don't know. I think that's who we thought they were going to be the whole year. You know what I mean? Like, and I'll give you guys this little nugget. Like, one thing I heard after the Michigan game, like, you know, was how, and I heard this before the Michigan game too, but you guys have seen the statistic where, like, they're the slowest playing team in college football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where they have, like, that there's the most time between plays. Like, it's like the opposite of what a Chip Kelly offense has always been. So, I don't know how much has been out there, but one thing that I heard was, like, when they looked at it, they wanted to treat this year like an NFL season because of the prospect of playing 16 or 17 games. So, the way they approached the season, they looked at it and said, okay, like, if we're going to approach the season that way, how do we lean into our strengths, which, you know, our running backs and our defense, like, how do we lean into that and make sure we're not only winning with those strengths, but we're also preserving those strengths so they'll be at full speed when you get to December and January? The way to do that was to limit the amount of plays they're playing during the season, right? And so, like, they felt like you treat this like an NFL season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Like, at least in the early stages, let's see if we can limit damage on our key players, limit damage on key areas of our team, and then we'll hit. We'll punch the gas when we get to December and January. And God, I hope that's what it is. You know, I mean, God, I hope that's where we're at right now, because it feels like it could be.
Albert, great stuff, not just today, but all year long, buddy. We got a little misty on New Year's Eve, so just want to say thank you, and great stuff as always, buddy. Enjoy time with the family at the hockey.
Happy New Year to everybody out there. Do you guys have predictions on tomorrow's game then?
No, I'm not doing it. The Browns ruined predictions for me this year because I was wrong every time.
Albert, I do have hope in the idea that Oregon's played three playoff teams, and all three, although they've won every one of them, all three have put up 30-plus points. And I listen, Dylan Gabriel's nice. I call him welfare Tua. I don't think he's going to destroy this defense. So I think he got a good chance.
Here's the other thing. The last time we played them, that was right before they sort of changed structurally what they were doing defensively and started attacking more. And I think you saw the pass rush start to come alive after that game. So I don't think Dylan Gabriel is going to be sitting back there on a lawn chair the same way he was back in October. Go Bucks.
Go Bucks, Albert. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Albert Breer, the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Obviously, we got plenty of Ohio State, Oregon to get to coming up at the 4 o'clock hour. But we'll react to his thoughts on the changes or lack thereof in Cleveland and the state of the Browns next on 92.3 The Fan. He didn't touch on the Andrew Berry bait, which I threw out, which was I think it's fan fiction to this point, but Andrew Berry taking over the Dee Podesta role and bringing in a new GM, theoretically, simply to run the draft.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, I've read a lot of the think pieces after Vrabel has left, and a lot of the people that would know and are around the building are suggesting that Vrabel had his hand on that draft in a big-time way, in a meaningful way. So,
which is good because, like, Mike Hall is really, really looking good.
That was one of the picks in particular that everyone pointed to and said, this is Vrabel. Vrabel wants this guy. And so I think it's going to be really interesting if you move Berry to a different role, how we all kind of shift away. Because I do think there's value in Andrew Berry. There's just not a lot of value in Andrew Berry in the draft.
Yeah, and I think that is like the number one thing that we've heard, and that I can't believe that they haven't heard it as well, is that the number one problem is you don't trust Andrew Berry to draft well enough to get out of this cycle of you're in.
Maybe they have heard it. Maybe that is part of the idea that Vrabel did have his hands and obvious and important say when it comes to some of the draft selections. You know, I mean, they might be very well aware of that.
What's wild about that is, because the Guardians, people don't remember this, but the Guardians, kind of in the middle of the Shapiro era, all the guys that made up that 2007 run, almost all those guys were from some other team, right? Very few of them were actually homegrown of their stars. Cliff Lee was from somewhere else. Oh, gosh, I'm not going to forget half the guys that were on that team. Casey Blake was a waiver wire claim. Sizemore was part of the Cologne deal.
I think Jax was like five.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Jax, these were baseball players in this town 15 years ago.
Baseball is a sport that is played at the corner of Carnegie and
that's true.
Ontario. Yeah.
Good to cover all the bases there.
Casey didn't know. This young generation, I don't know what they watch these days.
But somewhere in that span, they realized they had a developmental issue and, more importantly, a draft issue. And they didn't really fire anybody. They elevated the guy who had run the farm system to a new role, a different role, a better role, and then brought somebody in different to run the farm system. I don't think that's like, again, I'm not just get rid of Andrew Berry. I'm just, as it's currently constructed, to just be like, well, we all have owned our failure here. Yeah, that's not enough. No, you've owned it to each other. Cool. You've taken ayahuasca. You've stared into each other's eyes lovingly and said, my bad, dog.
That's Aaron Rodgers.
That's not the same thing as is owning it to your fans. I still do think. I think if Jimmy Haslam comes out next week and lays it on the line and says, I take responsibility for the Deshaun trade not working out to this point, and he's going to have to put it that way because they're going to have him on this roster for at least one more year, if not two more years.
Sure.
I think if he says that, there are some people who will be satiated. The problem is, there are very real concerns about leadership on the team, whether that's player leadership or coach leadership. You will need a overhaul of the offensive staff, because I'm assuming you're going back to the Stefanski offense next year, and you're going to get a quarterback or two to that will fit that. And then you're going to need to show something in the front office, because the drafting, guys, you can't just put it at the feet of, well, we haven't had a number one pick because the other two first rounders you had suck.
Well, and the problem here, Nick, is that if Vrabel had such a big impact and now he's gone, are we just back to Andrew Berry then making the selections again?
I mean,
but they haven't shown us the new path, and I don't know that anybody. We're not going to get another former head coach that comes in to be a consultant, and that's just how this works.
With respect to Cat Raish, who's the assistant GM, and Glenn Cook, who's the assistant GM, they've been here. So if they've been a part of the drafts that haven't worked out, why would I assume that all of a sudden just putting them in charge of the draft would make the drafting problems go away?
No, that's the thing. Like Vrabel was the new part, the new component. And if we're talking about hits and we're talking about guys that and the draft looking better this last year, then we have to recognize that the new mix here is now going away.
Yeah.
It's like when you have an offensive coordinator and he's great. It's like Ben Johnson in Detroit. He's awesome and he's great. Well, that's awesome and that's fun. But when he leaves, you still have to replace him. And you have to find a new person to kind of fill that gap.
In effect, you need what the Lions have with John Dorsey. John Dorsey is their super scout. He is the guy that like he bird dogs it, and he's a guy that comes in and goes, oh yeah, that guy's a real football player.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. The ethos is the problem. Like, they don't draft enough football players.
Well, but that's the thing. That's what Vrabel did that was so great, in my opinion, is that he came in there and he kind of played that John Dorsey role by all accounts. But he came in there and was like, hey, I get you like your analytics. I'm a football guy and I'll tell you. But they listened to him. They clearly did listen to
him. Well, yeah, but that the scary thing about that is they still were very reliant on a lot of the analytical features of the draft, which, again, I'm not trying to be against, but at the same point, if you can't turn on the tape and see that guy's a football player, it's obvious. No offense to Anthony Schwartz. It was obvious he wasn't a football player. It was obvious he was a track star masquerading as a football player if you watched Auburn.
Sure. Yeah, they fell in love with speed.
DTR. If you watched DTR at UCLA, it was obvious.
Yeah, you had enough tape to watch.
It's two parts. Do I think you could bring in your super scout to be the de facto head of the draft? You don't even call him the GM. You can call him whatever the hell you want. But like a Joe Douglas, who the only thing that guy did really, really well in New York is draft. Look at his draft picks. That's why you think they're in a better position than the Browns are roster-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to listen to him. And the problem is there will always be some sort of push and pull and some sort of friction between those guys who can just spot a football player sitting on a couch and the guys who are, that's not how you pick football players.
It gives me hope, though, with the reports and how much influence that Vrabel did have in this last draft, that they're willing and they're open to understand that maybe Barry isn't great at this and they can listen to guys if they get him in the building and they have the right guys. I just don't know. Vrabels don't grow on trees is my problem here, Nick.
That would be like, weird if they did.
It would be. But how do you replace a guy like that?
I mean, it shouldn't be that hard. There are, and I mean this with respect to Mike, because Mike, what makes him an anomaly is he's a football guy that's also, I think, a truly great head coach. Like, I think you've seen some of the in-game minutia with Mike Vrabel. That's where he's always sold me. But the fact that guy can then have an impact in other areas of football, that's what makes him kind of the anomaly. But you can find a guy who's really good at scouting talent. It's about listening to him. It's about saying this might be counterintuitive.
All right, but is that a positive, or do you feel like it's going in the positive direction, the fact that they did listen to Vrabel?
No, because I don't know. That's different as this guy's consultant, and this guy's now a part of the front office and making the decisions. Because I think in the end, the analytic guys are still going to make the decisions. And I think that's, again, been the problem with the draft. 216-474-0092. We'll obviously have more on this throughout the rest of this week, but earlier in the show, we have decided we are not a top five ranking show. That's just we don't do that.
No, we don't make lists. No, tear lists down.
Yeah, well, okay, we analyze lists
and then tear them down. Tear them down, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
So Daryl's list, which had the top five moments for him of Cleveland sports in 2024, leading off with the solar eclipse on opening day, it was DOA. It had no chance to succeed because of what he put atop there. Robert sent this in at Nick Wilson says, top five callers of 92.3 The Fan this year. Todd in Ward 1, who we haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah, by the way, Todd can't be the top caller when we never hear him call in.
Number two, Robert in Brecksville. Number three, Aunt Bev.
Wait, he made himself number two?
Uh-huh. Number four, that guy in Cleveland. Number five, Mr. Buckley. And he's a Knicks fan. Throw him off the list.
I love Mr. Buckley.
No, I'm sorry.
Mr. Buckley's great.
If he called under the same name every time, but when he does the name switcheroo, you lose scruples, yeah, in my opinion.
He's only Mr. Buckley to me. I love him.
But no, so we like Bonjour. We do like that guy in Cleveland.
Aunt Bev's fun. I haven't heard from her in a while.
But here's the problem. You can't put yourself on the list.
Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. No, so this is, I'm sorry, Robert, your list has been rejected. Do better next time. We appreciate you, but you can do better. Also, Real Xavier P sitting in top five bad Cleveland takes. Ooh. Number five, Joe Flacco's a starting quarterback. All right. You got that one today.
Okay.
Yeah. Number four, JB should keep his job. All right, I was on the right side of that one, so we're good. Number three, Kevin Stefanski is forced to do things. That's a really good one. This list is shaping up really, really well.
We're supposed to tear down a list, not prop them up.
It's a good list. I'm not going to tear down a good list. Number two, Mike Vrabel is to blame for the Browns. Nobody said that.
Who said that?
Nobody said that.
Now we tear him down.
Now we're tearing him
down.
And that's number two. Number one, Browns are a playoff team if you just remove Watson.
Ooh. Oh, no, I like that take,
no,
though.
No, that's a bad take. Yeah, because Deshaun Watson has all those dumbass penalties. Yeah, you're right.
Because penalties are the reason why they're a three-win football team. Okay.
Deshaun Watson.
Sure.
Blocking stopped being a problem after Deshaun Watson got hurt.
Quarterback doesn't matter, Nick. Quarterback doesn't matter.
I will say that's the best list we've had so far.
And that list, we just take the most important position and completely remove it from the equation.
216-474-0092. Send us in your top five of 2024 lists. If we like it, we will build it up. If we don't like it, like Robert and Brexville, that's a C-minus list. I gave Daryl's a C+. I'm going to give Real Xavier P a B-. That Vrabel thing was just, it was a blaring issue. Nobody said Vrabel is to blame for anything. That's wild. More on that and the state of Cleveland Browns going forward on 92.3 The Fan. This is a true story.
I don't know how you're going to rebound and tell a story that you just...
It's in the same vein. It's in the same vein. My dad told us for 2 years leading up to his death that he was working with Jim Carrey. He was going to make a comeback tour on comedy, and so my dad was doing like helping him write like parody songs because my dad used to be a stand-up comedian back in the day, and so for 2 years, and we were kind of like, oh yeah, sure, of course. And my mom was like, no, I drive him to Ashland. There's a private plane that comes in. They go to the hotel room. They write, and I was like, all right, what else am I going to find out of my dad here at the end?
Yeah.
But anyways, so my sister got into my dad's email to like email everyone that he had passed away that we didn't have the phone numbers of.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And so the Jim Carrey responded almost immediately, can I come to your dad's funeral? Your dad really made an impact on me, and I really, really loved getting to know him, and he talked so much about you guys. Can I come and say my respects?
Yeah, that's nice.
And so we were like, well, of course you can. And so we obviously were there for the calling hours. And Jim Carrey walks up to me, and it was the most mind-bending thing in the world.
Actual Jim Carrey. In my mind, I always thought that it was going to be like a different Jim Carrey. This is the real Jim Carrey.
It was a Jim Carrey.
That's just wasn't the Jim Carrey. That's what I thought. Okay.
It was like three rungs down the Jim Carrey, and he was such a nice guy, by the way.
Oh, what was the look on your face? Were you just so disappointed?
My sister and I both had eaten grins.
What happened to the private plane and all this different?
Because he really did. He's like a cruise comedian. He actually makes a butt ton of money.
Okay.
He's a successful comedian. He's just not that.
It's
Jim
not
Carrey.
That Jim Carrey.
The thing is, and I kind of explained it to him,
and then he's heard this his whole life too.
No, and I said, am I okay to tell the story at the funeral? And he was like, yeah. As I was giving my dad the eulogy, I was talking about my dad being a prankster and all this other stuff. I started telling the story, and everybody's smiling. Except Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I mean, that's been the butt of the joke for so many years.
He thought it was really funny when it was just me and him.
Yeah.
But when everybody else was laughing, this Jim Carrey, and I've never heard from Jim Carrey again.
You're a comedian.
Yeah, no.
Take it the way a comedian should.
No.
You're a funny guy.
No.
Laughs are part of what you do.
They are artistic and sensitive people, too. But yeah, so yeah,
well,
my dad.
That is like the big thing that always got him, right? Like, so, I mean, he knows when he dies, it's going to be Jim Carrey, comedian, dies. And a lot of people are like, whoa.
Oh, we're going to get a lot of the Denzel gifts. Like,
yeah.
Oh, but it's not that Jim Carrey.
But it's not that Jim Carrey.
Glad we're still doing that bit. But yeah, that was one of the things. That was one of like the long-term bits that happened. And we found out after my dad died that it wasn't the Jim Carrey.
Yeah, he's not his man, at least.
That's a great bit.
He worked with Jim Carrey.
It was a great bit.
I'd put, really that on, put that on resumes. Worked with Jim Carrey in writing comedy stuff. And so make them call you a liar.
Yeah. Hmm. Maybe if he would have done that, he'd still be here.
I doubt that.
Let's
case,
go.
But
okay. Ouch.
I think they're here nor there.
Ouch. How dare you write my dad off? He's already gone.
Comedy laughs weren't saving him, Nick.
We need 10 cc's of laugh. It's the only thing that'll cure his neurological needs.
Call the real Jim Carrey. We have a chance.
All right, let's get to quick hits. All right, Cavs and LeBron's Cavs and LeBron. There's only one LeBron. Face off tonight in LA.
There's going to be a story somewhere where there someone is like, I play ball with LeBron. Not that LeBron.
With a 9 p.m. tip, LeBron was asked about his future and gave a bold proclamation.
Your thoughts about the end increased as you've gotten older, and I guess. Like, what is sort of your current relationship with potential retirement at some point? Like,
It's very good. It's very good.
What will it be that tells you it's enough?
It won't be because I can't play this game at a high level. Because, to be honest, if I really wanted to, I could probably play this game at a high level. Probably about another 5 to 7 years if I wanted to. But I'm not going to do that.
All right, as with everything LeBron, because sometimes LeBron does speak in hyperbole, it doesn't mean he's being dishonest. The question here becomes, do you really think LeBron could play another 5 years, 5 to 7 years, as a starter if he wanted to?
Yeah, he could. He's worked a lot. His three-point game is much better than it used to be. He's, like, put a real emphasis on the shot. And your shot doesn't leave you, really. Now, he can't get to the basket the way that he used to, so that would be problematic. His legs will give out. It always does. But the amount of time he spends on his body and attention to detail on his body, yeah, I think he could if he wanted to.
Man, I really struggle with this. Here's the thing. Because I don't think he could do another 5 postseasons. But regular season, yeah. LeBron could be Babe Ruth. LeBron could just go out there. He'd get his 20 points in. He'd play 28 minutes. And his team probably wouldn't win, but LeBron could be a starter on that kind of team for the next 5 years, unquestionably.
Yeah, we just don't want it for you, LeBron.
Yeah.
Be
and
done.
He doesn't want to. He just wants you to know he could.
Well,
that's where LeBron is, yeah.
That's classic LeBron.
Omaha!
Oh, we have good news for the Gentites, and with Ashton Gentry in full display tonight, by the way. Mel Kiper has come out with his NFL draft preview and his draft guide, and in there, there's a little nugget right behind the Ashton Gentry conversation.
Mm.
The Browns might be a fit for Gentry. Even though they have bigger issues, Nick Chubb will be a free agent. And with that broken foot, the Browns might be in play.
Why? Why would an analytically based team
take... To be fair, Mel Kiper also names like 7 other teams in back of the Browns. But he lists the Browns first.
Yeah, but also, so it's two-parter. One, why would the Browns take Ashton Gentry with a top-3 pick, no matter how good he is? And two... Why would you do it in this draft where you're probably going to find an impact
and
running back?
That's the big problem
through
I
the
have.
Rest of the draft.
There's like 15 NFL running backs out of this draft class. You don't need to spend a first-round pick on Gentry. I love Gentry. You don't have to do
would
that.
Would you rather Ashton Gentry a 3-year Travion Henderson with one of your third-rounders? Ooh, did I just talk you into something?
Not talk me into it, but I'm more interested in that development than I am Gentry at 3. Gentry at 3 sounds insane.
Sounds like somebody's becoming a bit of an anti-Gentite over there.
I love Gentry, though.
It
no.
Sound like
I
you
love Gentry.
If you were Hulking a true Gentite, you would say, inject it into my veins
you know
no matter
Gentry
where it
did
falls.
Against Oregon? That Oregon team that Ohio State and Henderson will try to do things against tomorrow? A casual 190 yards and 25 carries and 3 tutties, okay?
Yeah, nobody's debating if he's good.
8 yards a pop and 3 touchdowns.
How much of a Gentite are you, really? You can't be 90% in and call yourself a full Gentite.
No, the whole meaning behind the Gentite conversation initially was the idea that the Browns and the Browns and Gentry would be linked together all throughout this draft class, and we have another case right here.
All right. Let's continue on. I don't know why I said all right like that. Quote of the year coming from, by the way, Jax, this is in the Y Drive. I don't know if we picked this up, but I should probably tell you right now. Quote of the year coming from LSU tackle Will Campbell, who is slated to be a top carry the 1, 10 pick. Some are saying he might actually be the best tackle in the draft. Jax, can you find it? All right. Then we're not going to do that one. We'll do a different one here. Vanessa and I. Oh, wait, no, now we've got it. Here's the quote of the year from Will Campbell.
You give up one sack a game for 12 games, you're going to work at Amazon. Nothing wrong with that. But whenever we're here, this is what we're striving for. If you ever got the time, go back and watch my first play of college football. I got my face ran through, punished. And that's just what it is. I mean, to be thrown in the fire like this against good teams, these dudes are trying to get paid. All they got to do is get to the quarterback. One thing we live by in the O-line room, a D lineman get one sack a game, and that's the only thing he can do. 12 games, he'll be a top five pick. You give up one sack a game for 12 games, you're going to work at Amazon.
It moved.
He sounds like Theo Vaughn.
I think, I'm sorry, as a hog molly, that got my hog molly a roll in there. Holy God. Can we just take him now? I mean, if you trade down and you get that guy with a fifth pick and he just comes out like, all right. I mean, he just goes full McConaughey.
Did you like how he talked or did you like what he had to say?
Yes.
That he's aware that he's going to be working at Amazon if he doesn't pick up the pace.
Yeah, I love that. Are you kidding me? And that he said it like Matthew McConaughey.
No. That was Theo Vaughn.
McConaughey. No. Theo Vaughn is
you play that first clip back and then you tell me that's not Theo Vaughn.
No, play
like the
again.
First
Real
sentence.
Quick.
Play
just,
the first,
just play
when
the
he
first
goes,
sentence.
Amazon.
You give up one sack a game for 12 games, you're going to work at Amazon.
No, Jax.
That's McConaughey.
Jax, come on. That is
McConaughey.
Is Theo Vaughn just doing
They're
a bad
swagger.
McConaughey impression? Is that all that is?
I think it's more McConaughey than it is Theo.
Well, I am shocked by this development.
Second opinion.
Definitely McConaughey.
All right. L-I-V-I-N. I don't do a good McConaughey, by the way.
We got three misinformed people around here is all I hear. That's all I got.
Spoken like a true Gentite.
That's all I got out of this conversation.
Whatever the Will Campbell equivalent of a Gentite is, where there's a will, there's a way. That's not good. Strike that from the record.
Alabama was a 22.5-point favorite over Vanderbilt, a 14-point favorite over Oklahoma, and a 16.5-point favorite today against Michigan. The common thread there, Nick, is that they've lost all three of those games. Now, is this better for Michigan that they beat Ohio State and they beat Alabama, or is this more an indictment on Alabama?
They can't
win teams when they're two touchdown favorites.
Yeah, no, this is about Alabama. And everyone's trying to spin. I like Kalen DeBoer. I loved what he did everywhere else. His first year in Alabama is a massive failure. You didn't get to the playoffs. Then in the bowl game you did play, you got beat by an 8-win Michigan team.
I mean, there's
team,
no other way to look at it than
who,
a massive
by the
failure.
Way, by the way, doesn't have a quarterback. Like, Alex Orji played one last game at Michigan because they needed a quarterback. They don't have a damn quarterback. And by the way, that dude is not good. Orji's great. Alex Orji, awful. The opposite of Orji's.
He's talking downtown.
Oh, yeah. But no, you agree? Like, this is a massive failure by Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, I mean,
DeBoer.
Alabama fans should be melting down right now.
They were. I know. Marissa,
they should be.
Who used to work with us, Marissa was melting down, especially at the end of the game when Michigan pulled away with that win. Like,
Saban in 17 years had three games where he lost his two touchdown favorites. DeBoer's done it in one season.
He is working from a deficit going into next year. And if you think they won't fire a coach after two disappointing years, you've not been paying attention to Alabama for too long. All right, guys, that is Quick Hits. When we get back, and take a look at this Ohio State game. All right, I'm getting there. This Ohio State game against Oregon and the path to a national championship on 92.3 The Fan.